once again, and welcome to SurgeSecurity.com's Security Wire Weekly for Wednesday, September 20th, 2006. Your weekly news and views on the information security market. I'm Eric Parizeau. This week, Andrew Braunberg from Current Analysis joins us to break down the network access control partnership between Microsoft and Cisco, plus why the Hewlett-Packard executive who allegedly committed identity fraud may get off scot-free. But first, our top story. The U.S. has a new man in charge of its cybersecurity. It was announced Tuesday that Greg Garcia of the Information Technology Association of America will become the first Assistant Secretary for Cybersecurity and Telecommunications within the Department of Homeland Security. The position was created several years ago specifically to give more priority to the task of watching over the nation's digital infrastructure. However, the position had gone unfilled until this week. Now, Garcia's main job will be to resurrect the National Strategy to Secure Cyberspace, a three-year-old plan that hasn't seen much traction since its publication. Plus, Garcia will also be charged with getting more private sector support involved in the battle to keep the nation's cyber infrastructure free of terrorists. Also in the news, EMC Monday took another big step into the security market when it agreed to pay $175 million for Network Intelligence, a maker of security event management products. This is the second major security purchase for the storage giant in recent months. It comes on the same day that EMC announced the closing of its acquisition of authentication specialist RSA Security. EMC will use its security assets to create a new security division, which will be headed by Art Coviello, RSA's former CEO. That division will continue to use the RSA brand as the overarching brand for all of EMC's security products, and that group will be headquartered in Bedford, Massachusetts, the current site of RSA's main offices. And now, this week's Security Spotlight. Nearly 2 years after pledging to work together on a joint network access control architecture, Microsoft and Cisco Systems last week unveiled a roadmap for an interoperable NAC solution. But is it really what it seems? And what will it mean for enterprises? Joining us to talk about that is Andrew Braunberg, Senior Analyst with Current Analysis. Andrew, welcome to Security Wire Weekly.
Thank you.
Andrew, for those listeners who may not be up to speed on Cisco's NAC architecture and Microsoft's NAT plans, can you briefly outline each of those and what they're all about?
Sure. They're fairly similar, actually, and probably we should take a step back. As you mentioned, both of these frameworks have been in development for quite some time. The two companies had pledged almost 2 years ago to start working on interoperability. So these are very traditional kind of NAC infrastructure plays, and I say that in a sense that they're very focused on this pre-admission posture check for an endpoint trying to come into a network. They want to do a quick check on the status of that device and make a determination of whether it meets the requirements of corporate policy. If it does not, they want to quarantine the device and perform some kind of a remediation and then bring it back in to give it full network access rights. So a very traditional kind of network access control. As the market's evolved over the last couple of years, we've seen some additional functionality come in. But again, NAC and NAP, two early examples that provide that foundational, predominantly pre-admission technology. So they both have similar architectures. There's a client piece, an agent involved in both of them. On the Cisco side, it's the Cisco Trust Agent. Microsoft side, the NAP agent, so no surprises there. They both also need an enforcement point. And so Cisco obviously has a lot of strengths there. They can use their switches and routers for enforcement. Microsoft traditionally used the DHCP approach to providing enforcement. That, over the years, has been shown to be a fairly weak a way to address enforcement. So Microsoft's actually expanded its ability to do enforcement. Now supports or will support 802.1x, VPN, in addition to its traditional DHCP enforcement. And now, so the third level here, we've got the client piece, the enforcement piece, and then we need a policy server. And so both, again, both of these companies' frameworks have an existing policy server. On the Cisco side, it's the access control server. And on the Microsoft side, it's their new Radius server, which will be called Network Policy Server, which is a replacement for the old Microsoft Internet Authentication Service server. So those are the main functional pieces of the two frameworks.
Now, taking those three pieces a step further, I think it's also important to set expectations for those hoping this might be an access control cure-all, because this is only going to really be possible for customers who make a major commitment to Cisco and or Microsoft, and that's going to include a lot of new software and equipment, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, this is about interoperability. This is not about open standards. What we're doing here is we're taking the basically proprietary Cisco approach, and we're making sure it's going to interoperate with a basically proprietary Microsoft approach. There's nothing that's immediately available on the ground with this, because the Microsoft piece is not even available until the second half of next year, because this is the Microsoft NAP piece is only supported in the upcoming Vista and the upcoming Longhorn releases. So this is really, if you're looking for immediate benefit of this, it's more in settling anxiety, perhaps, for customers who want to go ahead and do Cisco network equipment upgrades, and they want to make sure a year from now they're not going to run into a wall where they're not going to be compatible as Vista and Longhorn start rolling out.
So in that regard, looking 12 or 18 months out for organizations that are perhaps working on their planning processes now, what will the real benefits of interoperability between the two systems be? Can you give me an example of a capability that customers will be able to do then that they won't be able to do today?
Well, no, actually, there's really no new functionality included here, and that's probably an important point to make. And there's really not that much consolidation. I mean, my problem with these kind of announcements is, again, these are just about interoperability. They're about adding an additional layer of glue. They're not really about what I consider the harder work of trying to rationalize approaches, the kind of work that's typically done when you try to hammer out an open standard. Now, we do get some consolidation here, so there are benefits to the end users, and they'll become apparent as Vista rolls out. There's been some consolidation at the agent, so I think no surprise to anybody, the Microsoft agent will become the primary agent for both solutions. And you know, that makes sense, obviously, with their position on the client. So the NAP agent will handle a lot of the functionality that was traditionally done by the NAC, the Cisco Trust Agent. There'll still be some Cisco client agent components. A lot of people probably remember that Cisco just recently bought Meeting House, and now you might wonder, well, why did they do that? Well, they do need that supplicant technology. That technology will still be included, but it will be controlled by the NAP agent and actually be distributed by Microsoft's SMS technology. So there are some benefits there, both in agent consolidation and agent distribution. But there's some other areas where you just don't see that kind of consolidation. Initially, now this isn't going to roll out till next year. Initial rollouts, though, will require both sets of policy servers. So at that initial step, there's no consolidation in perhaps rolling up to either use just Cisco ACS or to use just the Microsoft policy server. There has been some cross-licensing done. I think the companies worded it, given market demand, they might actually do some consolidation where you could use one or the other in both frameworks. But at this point, it's really just about adding some glue and making sure we can use both of these frameworks kind of side by side, as opposed to kind of bringing them together and reducing some of the complexity.
Finally, then, based on what we know today, what's your take on how the architectures will come together, and your thoughts on the future of the partnership between Microsoft and Cisco?
Well, I think it's strong. I think their strengths are so complementary that it really makes sense for a lot of reasons for them to be committed, if you will, to this kind of interoperability. Clearly, Cisco's strengths are on the enforcement side of this. They've got all these devices that are going to be NAC-capable, and that's where they're going to continue to throw a lot of their emphasis. Now, Microsoft, on the other hand, obviously has an enormous base on the client side, and they are also very they have a lot of expertise on the remediation piece of this, which is not Cisco's strength at all. So really, the solutions do complement each other fairly well, but as you mentioned, they require large investments in both Cisco equipment and in new Microsoft equipment. So it's a complicated deployment task. It's not cheap, but the two frameworks used together do both have real unique strengths to them.
Andrew Braunberg, Senior Analyst with Current Analysis, thank you for joining us on Security Wire Weekly.
My pleasure.
Finally this week, it remains unclear just what will happen to those at computing giant Hewlett-Packard after several people there, including Chairwoman Patricia Dunn, allegedly hired investigators who used fraudulent means to obtain private phone records. However, according to a report in the New York Times this week, offenders may escape legal repercussions. According to various legal professionals, a criminal case may be difficult to prove. That's because the laws in California, where the alleged offense took place, don't specifically outlaw pretexting, the process of pretending to be someone else to access private phone records. Four different laws may be used to prosecute the alleged offenders, but those experts say none of them specifically mention pretexting. Ironically enough, according to the San Jose Mercury News, a recent bill that would have specifically labeled pretexting as illegal did not make it through the California state legislature. Despite that, the California Attorney General says he's still investigating and believes he may still have enough evidence to prosecute. The case will no doubt heat up next week when alleged offenders from HP are summoned before a congressional committee in Washington, D.C. And that is Security Wire Weekly from SearchSecurity.com. The latest corporate security news is always available as it breaks on our news page at SearchSecurity.com/news. And you can find more of our podcasts to download at SearchSecurity.com/podcast. We thank you for joining us. I'm Eric Parizeau. Stay safe out there.